This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of PIN compression syndrome from the hand section on orthobullets.com. PIN compression syndrome is a compressive neuropathy of the posterior interosseous nerve, which affects the nerve supply of the forearm extensor compartment. As far as the epidemiology, the incidence of PIN compression syndrome is reported as 3 per 100,000 people yearly. As far as the demographics, PIN compression syndrome is more common in manual laborers, males, and bodybuilders. As far as the pathophysiology, the mechanism of injury can be secondary to microtrauma, trauma, space-filling lesions, inflammation, or iatrogenic secondary to surgery. Microtrauma can be from repetitive pronosupination movements. Trauma includes things like fracture/dislocation, for example, things like Monteja fractures, radial head fractures, etc. Space-filling lesions can include things like ganglions, lipomas, etc. Inflammation can include things like rheumatoid synovitis of the radiocapitellar joint. As far as the pathoanatomy of PIN compression syndrome, there are 5 potential sites of compression, and these include the fibrous tissue anterior to the radiocapitellar joint, the leash of Henry, the extensor carpi radialis brevis edge, the arcade of Froesch, and the supinator muscle edge. The fibrous tissue anterior to the radiocapitellar joint is between the brachialis and the brachioradialis. The leash of Henry are recurrent radial vessels that fan out across the PIN at the level of the radial neck. The extensor carpi radialis brevis edge is the medial proximal edge of the extensor carpi radialis brevis. The arcade of Froesch is the proximal edge of the superficial portion of the supinator. And finally, the supinator muscle edge is the distal edge of the supinator muscle. Now let's go over some relevant anatomy. We'll go over the origin, course, and innervation of the posterior interosseous nerve. As far as the origin, the PIN is a branch of the radial nerve that provides motor innervation to the extensor compartment. As far as the course of the PIN, it passes between the two heads of the origin of the supinator muscle, it's in direct contact with the radial neck osteology, it passes over the abductor pollicis longus muscle origin to reach the interosseous membrane, and traverses along the posterior interosseous membrane. As far as innervation, motor innervation of the PIN include the common extensors and the deep extensors. Common extensors include the ECRB, which is actually often from the radial nerve proper, but can be from the PIN, the extensor digitorum communis, or EDC, the extensor digiti minimi, or EDM, and the extensor carpi ulnaris. Motor innervation from the PIN is also to the deep extensors, which include the supinator, the abductor pollicis longus, or APL, the extensor pollicis brevis, or EPB, the extensor pollicis longus, or EPL, and the extensor indicus proprius, or EIP. As far as sensory innervation from the PIN, there are sensory fibers to the dorsal wrist capsule, which are provided by the terminal branch, which is located on the floor of the fourth extensor compartment. Keep in mind that there is no cutaneous innervation from the posterior interosseous nerve. As far as the presentation of PIN compression syndrome, symptoms may include insidious onset, which often goes undiagnosed. The defining symptoms, however, are pain in the forearm and wrist, as well as weakness with finger, wrist, and thumb movements. As far as pain in the forearm and the wrist, the location depends on the site of PIN compression. For example, pain just distal to the lateral epicondyle of the elbow may be caused by compression at the arcade of Froesch. Physical exam should include inspection, motion assessment, as well as certain provocative tests. Cases of chronic compression may cause forearm extensor compartment muscle atrophy. As far as motion assessment, weakness may manifest as finger metacarpal extension weakness, as well as wrist extension weakness. Wrist extension weakness will manifest as inability to extend the wrist in neutral or ulnar deviation, and the wrist will extend with radial deviation due to the intact ECRL, which is innervated by the radial nerve, and an absent ECU, which is innervated by the PIN. Provocative tests to know include resisted supination and a normal tenodesis effect. Resisted supination will increase pain symptoms. As far as a normal tenodesis test, the tenodesis test is used to differentiate from extensor tendon rupture from rheumatoid arthritis. As far as evaluation of PIN compression syndrome, radiographs are not commonly needed for the diagnosis of PIN compression syndrome. An MRI is also not commonly needed for the diagnosis of PIN compression syndrome, but may help to site and delineate the soft tissue mass responsible for compression. It may also be helpful for surgical planning of mass resection. Other studies that you may obtain include an EMG, which may help identify the level of nerve compression and may be used to rule out the differential diagnosis of neuropathy. As far as the differential for PIN compression syndrome, diagnoses include cervical spine nerve compression, brachial plexus compression, and peripheral neuropathy. Treatment of PIN compression syndrome can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes things like rest, activity modification, stretching, splinting, and/or NSAIDs, as well as lidocaine/corticosteroid injections. Rest, activity modification, stretching, splinting, and NSAIDs are recommended as first-line treatment for all cases. A lidocaine/corticosteroid injection is indicated when a compressive mass such as a lipoma or a ganglion has been ruled out, isolated tenderness distal to the lateral epicondyle, and when a trial of rest, activity modification, and anti-inflammatories were not effective. As far as the technique of a lidocaine/corticosteroid injection, a single injection is given 3 to 4 centimeters distal to the lateral epicondyle at the site of compression. Operative options for PIN compression syndrome include surgical decompression. This is indicated when symptoms persist for greater than 3 months of non-operative treatment or if there's a compressive mass detected on imaging. As far as outcomes, results are variable from surgical decompression. Keep in mind that spontaneous recovery of motor function was seen in 75 to 97% of non-traumatic case series, and you may monitor these patients to improve for up to 18 months. As far as the approach to surgical decompression, typically an anterolateral approach to the elbow is the most common approach. However, you may also consider a posterior approach. Decompression should begin with release of the fibrous bands connecting the brachialis and brachioradialis. It should then proceed to the leash of Henry, the fibrous edge of the ECRB, and the radial tunnel, including the arcade of Froesch and the distal supinator. Complications to mention include a neglected PIN compression syndrome and chronic pain. Neglected PIN compression syndrome may manifest as muscle fibrosis of PIN innervated muscles, and this may result in a tendon transfer procedure to reestablish function. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 75-year-old female presents with difficulty extending her fingers and thumb. Her exam is notable for subcutaneous nodules, ulnar deviation of the metacarpophalangeal joints, and swan neck deformities. The wrist radially deviates with extension. Extension cannot be actively initiated or maintained when her fingers are passively manipulated. Tenodesis is normal. What pathology would best explain her symptoms? And the choices are 1. Attenuation of the sagittal bands. 2. Tendon rupture. 3. Peri-elbow synovitis causing nerve compression. 4. Intersection syndrome. And 5. Distal radio ulnar joint synovitis. The correct answer to this question is 3, peri-elbow synovitis causing nerve compression. So the patient has rheumatoid arthritis and an inability to activate muscles innervated by the posterior interosseous nerve. Nerve compression at the level of the elbow joint best explains her symptoms. To quickly review, the PIN is a branch of the radial nerve and provides innervation to the extensor compartment of the forearm. PIN compression leads to weakness of wrist, fingers, and thumb. Preserved innervation to the ECRL allows for wrist extension, but with concomitant radial deviation as a result of a denervated ECU. No cutaneous feels are supplied by the PIN, so diminished sensation would not be observed. Dang et al. Review compression neuropathies of the forearm and draw attention to a variety of etiologies. Many cases of PIN neuropathy are attributed to microtrauma from repetitive movements, typically associated with the patient's occupation and activity. Other causes include fibrous bands, space-occupying lesions, and peri-elbow synovitis associated with rheumatoid arthritis. The authors advocate for the use of electrodiagnostic studies to confirm the diagnosis and consider other etiologies, such as tendon rupture or subluxation, in addition to a more proximal nerve lesion. Millender et al. reported on 3 cases of PIN paralysis caused by anteriorly bulging synovitis in rheumatoid arthritis patients. All were initially diagnosed as extensor tendon ruptures. One resolved after steroid injection, the second resolved after synovectomy, and the third required tendon transfers. The authors note a history of elbow pain and shooting pains along the course of the radial nerve prior to paralysis. In addition, extensor weakness precedes paralysis in contrast to tendon rupture. Moving on to the next question. Compressive injury to the posterior interosseous nerve will lead to EMG fibrillations in which of the following muscles? And the choices are 1, extensor carpi radialis longus / extensor carpi radialis brevis / brachioradialis. 2, extensor carpi radialis longus / supinator / abductor pollicis longus. 3, extensor pollicis longus / supinator / abductor pollicis longus. 4, brachioradialis / supinator / extensor pollicis longus. And 5, extensor pollicis longus / supinator / abductor pollicis brevis. The correct answer to this question is 3, extensor pollicis longus / supinator / abductor pollicis longus. So based on the choices that we mentioned, fibrillations will be seen in the extensor pollicis longus, supinator, and abductor pollicis longus muscles. To quickly review, the radial nerve splits into the superficial radial branch and the posterior interosseous nerve at the anterior aspect of the radiocapitellar joint, just proximal to the supinator muscle. The PIN innervates the EDC, EDM, ECU, EPB, EPL, EIP, APL, and sometimes the ECRB. Compressive neuropathy of the PIN leads to motor dysfunction, namely weakness with wrist and finger extension. Luban et al. Review uncommon compression neuropathies affecting the upper extremity. They indicate that PIN syndrome may be caused by rheumatoid arthritis and compressive ganglion cysts. Depending on which nerve branch is affected, partial lesions may develop. They recommend use of conservative measures like rest, activity modification, and splinting first. Decompressive procedures may be indicated in symptoms lasting greater than 3 months. And moving on to the final question, spontaneous entrapment of the posterior interosseous nerve most commonly occurs in which of the following locations? And the choices are 1, lateral intermuscular septum, 2, extensor carpi radialis brevis, 3, arcade of Froch, 4, mid-substance of the supinator, and 5, leash of Henry. The correct answer to this question is 3, arcade of Froch. So the extensor carpi radialis brevis, supinator muscle, arcade of Froch, and leash of Henry are potential sites of compression for the posterior interosseous nerve. The most common location of spontaneous entrapment is the arcade of Froch. The lateral intermuscular septum is a site of compression for the radial nerve. That's all for this review about PIN compression syndrome. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.